Dennis, by the time this episode comes out, I will be, unfortunately, sadly for me, please, the upstanding, remove your hats. A moment's silence and sympathy for Riley because he is back in the United Kingdom. We're recording this ahead of time because I've got a grueling flight across the world this week.
What is ahead of time? And we're recording it quite late at night, my time. And especially considering the big fat intro we just did for the fine folks at patreon.com/have a listen to this, we are well ahead of schedule.
Yeah. So the people on Patreon will be enjoying this, what, nearly a week early? So get across patreon.com/half-assistory. Sign up there.
No, once you have a listen to this.
If you've still got some money left, obviously, you've got to have a listen to this. But Dennis, I'm coming back. I'm coming back, heading back to the UK. Not looking forward to that. Then going to Denmark, going to Germany. Traveling is, I say you and I have traveled probably more than average.
By a very large margin, yes.
Well, I mean, we also met people while we were working, because Dennis and I used to travel to large events around the world for our work with Magic the Gathering. But I've met people who would go on those miles flights.
Yeah, but like it. Hanging out with those people definitely skews your perception. But the vast majority, well, truthfully, like worldwide, the vast majority of people probably never leave the country they were born in.
Yes, true.
And then beyond that, I would say of the remainder, the vast majority of them go abroad once, maybe twice a year at a push. And when you and I had a couple of years there, we went abroad like 18 times.
No, because you're also thinking about it from a European standpoint. For people who live, for example, in places like the United States or Brazil,
or continent-sized nations,
massive nations, they don't, like you're saying, they go overseas once or twice a year. No, they go on holiday once or twice
a year. Yeah, you're right. If you live in Kansas, you vacation in Florida or in California or at a push Mexico, I suppose.
Depending on exactly what your budget and perspective is on that kind of travel,
like, or whether you own a passport.
My dad had never left the country until he was in his 40s, I think, when we went to Fiji on a family holiday.
Yeah, it's pretty. But like, Australia's continent sized.
Yeah, that's the thing. You can go. I mean, unless you want to go you can ski in Australia, but the mountains are not great. They do have to put literal fake snow on the mountains.
We have one of those in Ireland, yeah.
Unless you want to ski on real snow, you can essentially go anywhere and do anything in Australia. It's that big.
Ireland's the total opposite. Nothing in Ireland is more than 3 or 3.5 hours or so at most away from anything else at the very most.
Yes.
And really 90% of places you'd really want to go are inside of 2 hours of each other.
Exactly. Like if you live in Kerry, you can be like, now what's the furthest I can get away from Kerry? You look at the map, it's like, Derry. Great. I'm swapping one letter and I'm also ending up in Derry.
Yeah, exactly. You can pop into Northern Ireland, I guess, which is the same, but with a poorer economy for the most part. And then to go anywhere meaningful, to have any kind of actually meaningfully different experience, you need to get on a plane or, I suppose, a boat.
So what did you do for family holidays? Was it all just Croatia? Because I was thinking about talking about. Because I'm going essentially for a holiday for 2 weeks, and I'm working. I'm working at a big Age of Empires tournament sponsored by Red Bull. This episode, proudly unknown and unheard by Red Bull.
I've always wanted to do that. Just start doing ad reads and hope the money comes later, right? Manifest destiny, right? No, when we did for holidays as a kid, it was weird because my parents fled Yugoslavia, fled Bosnia-Herzegovina during the war. And much like when the pandemic started here and we were all told to stay inside for a couple of weeks until it all blows over, they were like, oh yeah, we'll live in Ireland for a couple of months and we'll go home. Obviously, they literally never did that.
You never told me this.
Oh yeah.
Really?
They were like, oh, it'll blow over.
Dennis, I did not know that. I thought that, because I know you, so your mum came out a couple of months earlier than your dad. And I thought
other way around. My dad came and visited, and then they came together later, basically.
But wasn't your mum left here alone with you for a while? Or was that just because your dad was working all
the
time?
My mum was with me in Croatia. My dad was here.
Ah, okay. Sure. Sorry. Shows how much I listen to you when you're talking. But I thought the whole thing was like, no, we're done. Like, we're not leaving now. We've got a taste for it. The rolling green hills of Ireland, we're all about it now.
I mean, they do love it now, but I think they had and by the time things were safe and things had stabilized, they built a life here, and I was in school and all this kind of stuff, so they never did. But I think when they left, I mean, even when they left, Mostar to go to, the parts of Croatia they were in, They were very much of the sort of, it was, and it's exactly like COVID, like, you know, oh yeah, this will blow over for a little bit. And 2 weeks yes. turns into 4 weeks, into 3 months, into 2 years for us yeah. and for them to the rest of their lives. It was weird. My parents draw a lot of similarities to the war and when the pandemic happened, because they were so unfazed by it as a result. Because they're like, yeah, I've had, you know, entirely life-altering experiences happen to me. And my dad always says, and to this day will always say, you can get used to anything. No matter what's happening, after a couple of weeks, you'll get used to it.
Yeah, well, I mean, update on the fillings that I got, Dennis. You know, while we're talking about war and pandemics and that sort mm-hmm. of stuff, those fillings that I had to deal with, don't even yep. notice them anymore.
There you go. You can get used to absolutely anything. Dude, yep. I screwed up my knee. I tore my quad tendon, everything. I never talked about the podcast, actually. I'll put that in my pocket for another time. couldn't walk. Couldn't walk, you know. I told you all that. I sent you some grisly photos and stuff.
Yep.
You got used to it. It's almost a good portion of the way better now. But you just get used to it. You play around yeah. it, you know, and yeah, it's yeah. wild. But yeah, so what happened was, you know, I think the first time I went on holidays with my parents was in 2001 or so, something like that.
Yeah, so nearly 10 years after they fled.
Yeah, exactly. And all they did was go back to Mostar and visit their old friends and see who was still around, see who had died and visit people and stuff like that. For 3 weeks out of the year, in July, every year for 7 or 8 years in a row, probably until yeah. I was like, I am not going anymore. Yep. I'm 16 or whatever. Stop it.
Yeah, I had a very similar experience with family holidays at mine as well, although we didn't go to Croatia. We went to Mitamita. But so it was
we were going to Bosnia, dude. We weren't even going to Croatia.
Oh, sorry, to Bosnia. Yeah, right. So but it was the same routine.
Oh yeah.
So the same people routine. Did the same things every time.
Oh yeah, exactly. And it's because I think they were flirting with the idea of, I don't know whether they had ever they were still considering going back or or what, but I was so deathly bored, dude. And it's weird because now I love going back. Now that I have some adult yeah. perspective, I've brought a lot of friends and girlfriends and things back, and like, you know, Nikki and I have gone back, and we're twice and probably three times, I suppose, going again next year for a wedding, all this kind of stuff. I love it. Yeah. But at the time, I was like, God, get me out of here. I remember I'd bring a PlayStation with me 1 year.
Oh, and dude. And
that was an absolute game changer. I mean, because every year before that, I brought Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix and read it cover to cover like 6 times.
Do you know, this is so funny because when I coming into this episode, I'm like, oh, I'm gonna share some of the perspectives and experience I had on family holiday with Dennis, right? And, you know, mm-hmm. see if there's anything there. You've just done it for me.
Is it exactly the same?
It is. I mean, my family didn't flee war-torn, you know, Mitamita to
ethnic cleansing, live in Melbourne. Yeah.
They didn't. Yeah, they weren't anything like that. But it's so funny how even like no matter what the origin, no matter the reason behind the destination of family holiday, no matter like we live on opposite corners of the planet, but it's still exactly the same experience.
I think that's just a unique like 8-year-old experience, right?
Pardon?
I think it's just a very 8-year-old experience to have that to do that thing, right?
Well, just get the way that. The way that it changed over the years as well is exactly the exact rhythm that happened for me. I have a question for you before we sort of really compare notes here. How does Nikki feel about visiting your ancestral home? How does Nikki feel about visiting the place that you used to go on your family holiday?
She loves it.
Okay. Well, that's where the similarities fall apart.
Oh, no.
So we used to go to this place called Mitamita, right? And we used to camp. And we would camp for weeks, right? We'd probably go away for about 3 weeks to a month living in tents for the year, right? Mm-hmm. And when I was younger, oh my goodness, I absolutely loved it. Because all you do, ride bikes around, go and find little hidden places in the forests to like play on the Game Boy, go and jump in the creek and the river, go and get $2 worth of chips at the pub, which just gave you a mountain of chips for that amount of money, right? Like it was incredible, right? Like actual proper salad days. Mitamita is this beautiful, exquisite little Australian country town nestled in a river valley, right? So there's mountains. The Australian version of mountains.
Big hills, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. On the junction of a river, one called the Mitamita River, one called the Snowy Creek, which then becomes the Snowy River.
They are very uncreative with these names. Mitamita is just one name twice, and then they were like, we can call the river the same thing. It's fine. Nobody needs to know this now.
Well, I mean, no, that makes sense. The town is called Mitamita. The Mitamita River ends in the town.
The Mitamita River?
The Mittamitta River River. Dennis, I cannot actually join you in making fun of the name Mittamitta because I'm reasonably sure it is an indigenous name. So I'm going to leave that one alone. I'm not sure what your position is on making fun of Australian Indigenous place names, because I don't have any problem making fun of either Irish or Croatian place names.
Yeah, that's true. We've gone on Google Maps and had a laugh at both of those nations' place names, but it's different.
It is different.
I don't know how to articulate why it's different.
Well, it's different because the Indigenous people of Australia are deeply, deeply oppressed.
So are the Irish
people have also been deeply, deeply oppressed.
So are like the Boston people, dude.
The Irish are an Indigenous population that has been deeply, deeply oppressed and dispossessed of its land for
more
a
recently
long, long time.
Than Indigenous people in Australia as well.
No, it is ongoing here. We live on stolen land in this country, so it's they don't have their own republic like the Irish do.
That's true.
Anyway, I think the main difference is that Irish and Bosnian people are white and Indigenous Australians are not. So I think it sort of folds into that larger category. Anyway, so Mittamitta, beautiful town, picturesque, absolutely gorgeous, Dennis. Mm-hmm. But then as I got older, like you, I became so thoroughly disinterested in going, right? Like I wanted to stay back in Melbourne, see my friends. I had a girlfriend at the time, once I got to like 15, that sort of stuff. And being away from her for even a moment was just torturous, Dennis.
Dude, I remember sitting in so many Bosnian internet cafes just to go on MSN with my girlfriend back home. Oh my God. Yeah.
Well, we didn't even have that. There was no internet up there.
Well, of course, this was back in the 80s, right?
This is back in the 2000 and nothings. Mittamitta was so far away, there was not only no internet, there was no mobile coverage, there was nothing. Like, even if you had a mobile phone, you couldn't make calls. I got one payphone call, right? I had to use
a payphone.
Yeah, an actual payphone, right? Oh, boy. It was something else.
I remember I had a curse, dude. Every time I went to Bosnia, I would come home and my girlfriend, when I was a kid, would, and this girlfriend's I have when I was, 13, 14. Mm. So we're talking big old true love here, dude.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, that was the same with me, as a 15-year-old being absolutely...
Oh, when you fall, you fall hard, man. Absolutely.
Yeah. And being away for just a week was torture. Anyway, go on.
Oh, we always break up right after I got back. One of my girlfriends cheated on me while I was on holidays. I hated it.
Yeah.
Bad time. Bad time for 15-year-old Dennis.
Well, it's a good test, right? It's a good test of any relationship. Can you spend a couple of days or a week or so apart? And if they end up going and, if they go and have dalliances with other people, Dennis, you probably dodged a bullet there.
I definitely did.
Yeah, and instead you ended up with a wife who keeps her teeth in a silver jar at the age of...
Just in case you need those like baby stem cells, I guess.
But then exactly what happened with you, as I got older, as I got in my 20s, I was like, oh yeah, absolutely. Mum, you're going up to Mittamitta? Oh, absolutely I'll come, for sure. I'd love that, right? And it got to the point where...
You need time to bake in the nostalgia, I guess, right?
I suppose so. Like, it's one of those things, you cook it in the oven as a young kid and then you take it out and you can't eat it yet. It's too hot. You have to let it cool down, right? Cools down through your teenage years. Yeah. And then you go back for a slice like, this tastes just as good as I remember when I was a kid,
There's also a weird defensive thing where a very common thing for this is like, it's okay for me to make fun of where I come from. It's okay for me to make fun of my family. But you can't make fun of my family. Even if you'd be saying exactly the same stuff, it's different. And all the stuff I would complain about as a kid as being boring or trite or too hot, I'd be like, guys, you got to check this out. It's great. Yeah. And I'm like, and I can hear 8-year-old Dennis in my brain being like, what are you talking about? We hated this.
Yeah. Well, the experience I had going back, because I took Megan when we first came to Australia, I didn't go on a family holiday. We were driving up to meet some friends at a folk festival and we stayed for a couple of nights in Mitter. Got the tent, went to the caravan park that we used to stay at, all that sort of stuff, right? Set up the tent. And I was like, I'm going to show you everything. I'm going to show you all the stuff that there is in Mitter. And it took about 10 minutes because Mittamitta is tiny and actually not that nice. It is just a tiny village in the middle of nowhere with like a shitty creek to swim in and a pub that is now very overpriced. There's just nothing to do. And Megan was kind of like, is this it? And I was like, no, listen, you don't understand. It was like...
I was going to say caught on, but you didn't go back. We're disappointed. You were like, just as I remember it.
Well, that's it. And Megan kind of opened my eyes to the fact that it's really not that nice. But because it's so... It's just hard for me to... It's like when you look at pictures of your parents when they're young. For some reason, for me, that image just doesn't stick because I always just see them as like... Like, I can't really conceptualize my mum as a 22-year-old. I know she was at one point. I can see pictures of her, but I was just like, that doesn't... No. That doesn't stick. You know, that's a different person.
What's weird to me is that I'm now older than my mum was when they fled Yugoslavia. And I'm a year younger than my dad was.
And do you feel like you'd be equipped to do something like that?
I mean, no, but they weren't either. They just had to.
They just had to do it.
It's a fully a needs wants thing. Riley, I'm on the mita.com.au website here, right?
Okay, yeah.
There is a things to do section with a horrible banner. And these are the things that the lovely people of Minamina have decided to highlight as things to do in their town, right?
Oh, can I guess?
Yes.
So one is going to be visit the water or the waterhole. Have a swim in the waterhole.
Is that Snowy Creek?
The Snowy Creek, yeah. Snowy Creek. It goes on one side. There's a lovely park, a sort of the bank that gently goes down into the creek, and then there's another part that is just a sheer cliff which you can scale and climb up, and then jump from the cliff into the creek. I, to my greatest shame, have never actually done that. My sister did, which put me and my brother to great
a lot of shame. Yeah,
but because she's younger than both of us. She's younger than me by 8 years, quite considerably younger than me, and she still absolutely shamed me in that regard. Like the first time my brother beat me in Mario Kart, to be beaten by your younger sibling at something like that, a source of great shame. Is another one go to the pub?
No.
Wow, the single place to eat out in the town didn't make it onto the things to do list.
So it goes Minamina River. It says go rafting on the river. Okay.
Yep.
Then it says... The second point is just the river has fish in it.
Fishing's really big up there. Lots of people will come up and they'll because there's you can go and get like rainbow trout and all sorts. Yeah. Of stuff. People would come up on fishing holidays to Minamina.
Then there's it's weird. It's like there are some walking tracks. There's no links or maps or anything. It's like you can go for a walk, I guess, which is true of almost anywhere. Mm-hmm. Then there's the Mighty Mita Muster.
Oh, the Mighty Mita Muster. Yeah, that was usually in March. It appears to be like a
wood chopping, ranching, stockman competition.
Honestly, the Mighty Mita Muster absolutely ruled. It was so good, right? So it was just a kind of like all the fun bits from an agricultural show. So it wasn't
like a rodeo, right?
They weren't going. Kind of. They weren't going around putting ribbons on ducks, but there were like sheepdog trials, and there was wood chopping competitions and all that sort of stuff, herding sheep, and just an
agricultural. A lot of horses. It looks like.
I don't remember the horses so much, but
this website's almost exclusively photos of horses, dude. This is way up Megan's alley.
Yeah, Megan. Oh, Megan would probably love the Mighty Mita Muster. It was indeed. It was a very mighty experience. It was really
the Mighty Mita Muster. And again, this is not me making fun of the indigenous name. It's the words "mighty" and "muster" doing the lifting here. The Mighty Mita Muster sounds like something I would order at Burger King, or in your case, Hungry Jack's, I suppose.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
But no, so that's the Mighty Mita Muster.
That was always a good time.
Then there's Snowy Creek, which you covered. There's a golf course. Cool.
Oh, dude, can I tell you about the golf course, mate? Yeah. I've got to tell you about this golf course. So the golf course doesn't have a, 24/7 staff of groundskeepers who are there manicuring the lawns, right? So it's a proper country golf course. It's choppy, it's rough, right? It's covered in leaves and dead branches and stuff. But the green, right, of all the holes isn't grass. Have you ever seen, you would have seen, the French Open?
Yeah.
Tennis? What do they call it? The clay courts?
AstroTurf?
No. The clay courts. The stuff that it's like, it's like sandy, gravelly.
Oh yeah.
Right. What is it called? There's a name for it. I can't remember
clay.
What it's called.
A clay court.
There's an actual name like for the substance.
Lawn
stuff.
Tennis.
Anyway, it's not. I've very specifically said it's not lawn.
Court is one of the types of tennis court which supported tennis originally. Yeah, this is lawn tennis. Rubico.
Something, it's got a name something like that, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, whatever that name is, right, that's what the greens are made of. So they're not green, they're black.
They're browns, yeah.
But then, even better, right, how a golf course will have a flag over the hole, right? And then you pick up the stick with the flag on it when someone's putting
it in. Yeah.
There's no flags. There are rakes sticking out of the holes because you have to rake the green once you've finished. You have to rake the clay in a spiral formation once you've...
Like a Zen garden.
Yeah. No, exactly like that. Exactly like that. You have to rake it like a Zen garden once you finish putting it in. Yeah. It was great.
That was my favorite part.
That was what I used to like going and doing, because you could make, like, I would really enjoy going around in a perfect spiral or going across in a grid formation, right? Like up and down, to have it as neat as possible. And then you'd walk across on the side of your feet to try not to leave footprints when you're putting the rake back in the hole.
Is that not a prime opportunity to draw dicks on the green?
This is, I think, even before a dick drawing era. This is when I was like, you know, 6 or 7. This is before that really came into vogue. Anyway, so what else? There can't be many other things on the list.
The Pioneer Mine?
Never heard of that one. Nope.
The Witch's Garden?
Oh, the Witch's Garden, yeah. I went to the Witch's Garden one time, and it was so boring.
Are you kidding me? It's the largest collection of medicinal plants and herbs in Australia, Riley.
Well, it was, yeah, and that for some reason didn't fascinate me when I was 10 years old. Me and my brother were taken along by mum. Mill probably came along, but she would have been like, you know, in a pram. Anyway, so this woman was showing mum around her garden, and there were pictures of the statues of witches. And I thought, oh, maybe it'll be cool. Maybe there'll be like, you know, fairies and witches and goblins and stuff there. No, it was just a really boring garden. But the family that, like, it's just someone's backyard, essentially. Like, it's a big country property that they've planted all these things in. And I mean, look, I'm sure as an adult, there'd be stuff that I would find very interesting. But as a kid, I was bored out of my mind. So I went off and started playing with the kids that lived in this house, and then they're like, oh, come inside. And we were like playing on the Nintendo 64, and then mum came in and she was like, Riley, what are you doing? Come out here. And she was like, she was so embarrassed because I'd just gone and like she'd paid for entry into this garden, and I was just been like, so yeah, I'm going
crash
on
the
my
house.
Mario Kart in the house. Oh man,
that's so good. All right, the last couple of things here are the Dartmouth Dam.
I was going to tell you about the Dartmouth Dam, we'll come back to that. Yep.
Granite Flat, which is a... This isn't anything. Granite Flat was once a thriving mining town with a large Chinese population. It is currently being explored for copper and gold. All that remains of it is an old Catholic church and a small cemetery. There's nothing there.
Yeah, there's a lot of that in Australia. There's a lot of, oh, there's gold here. Or, oh, there might be gold here. Let's build a town. Nope, no gold. Or the gold ran out. See ya.
Bye.
Yeah,
and then,
exactly.
Again,
do you know what you go around, Dennis? If you drive through the bush in regional Victoria, often you will see a lot of stone chimneys. Nothing else. Just big piles of stone, right? Like a big stone tube, essentially, built out in the middle of a paddock. Nothing else there, right?
What?
Because people would come and build houses out of wood. Obviously, you can't build a fireplace out of wood. Build the fireplace, the hearth and stuff out of stone. Over the 100 or 150 years since the gold rush, the house has collapsed and fallen down and rotted to nothing. But the stone chimney stayed there.
Weird. And the last two things are... one of the points just that scenic tourism is popular, which is has a little bit of thing. But again, this is just walking again.
Mm-hmm.
And the last one is Eskdale.
So a different town.
It's a different town. Started with gold, but now is the dairy hub of Mitter Valley.
Yeah, you can go and get some delicious chalky milk at Eskdale, yeah. I do enjoy that the last thing on the Mitter list of things to do is go somewhere else.
Oh, there's a lot. Someone shared something on the Ireland subreddit, and I think it was in Kerry or whatever. And it was like, things to do while in Kerry. And the first one was visit Dublin. okay.
So before we move on from Mitter chat, Dennis, I've got a piece of Mitter trivia for you here.
It's the dam.
I mentioned before there were two rivers, right? The Snowy Creek and the Mitter River. Would you like to guess, Dennis, which one of them is colder? Which one of them do you not swim in because it is too cold?
I mean, assuming there's no sort of Greenland Iceland naming convention problem, I would assume Snowy Creek is the colder
one. You would assume the snowy one, right? After all, it's coming down from the mountains. It is called the Snowy Creek because it is made of snow melt.
Mm-hmm.
Incorrect. The Mitter River is absolutely bone chilling, like impossible.
Well, I think that's more
to
do with how fast it flows, right?
No, it is where it comes from. The Mitter River comes from the Dartmouth Dam, and it comes from the bottom of the dam. It's not a spillage dam. So the water that feeds the Mitter River, right, is coming from the coldest part, the part that is untouched by sunlight, right at the bottom of the dam, right?
Oh, it just sits in shade. Yeah.
It's just freezing, freezing cold because it's all dam water. Yeah. But the Dartmouth Dam is where everyone would go and fish. Take your little tinny out there and you get on the beers and sit in the tinny and fish for trout in the dam.
Look, dude, I'm all for revisiting things you didn't like as a child and hoping, you know, that the fresh eyes of adulthood lead you to like gems and nostalgia you didn't think you'd have. But talking about Mitta, I think I gotta be with Megan on this one. This sounds awful.
Yeah, yeah. Because I've floated the idea like, oh, we could go, and she's like, no. We can leave that. And my brother's kind of opened up to that as well. He's like, we're not. I don't like it. Because I tried to organize a family holiday when I was and mum. I went with mum and my sister. And it was fine. Like, it was nice to go back and a bit of nostalgia, whatever else. And this is a nice, quiet place to hang out.
Bust into that kid's house again. Where's the N64? Let's go. You guys got a Switch yet?
Yeah. No, well, they're still, they wouldn't be. They wouldn't have made. They'd just be picking up the Wii U, I reckon, out that way now. Yeah.
Gotcha. Riley, what I want to talk about this week is also travel related. But okay. It's less about the destination and more about the journey. So something happened to a friend of mine this past week to do with airport security. And as we mentioned, you and I are both storied travelers. So I have to imagine there is something airport security related percolating in your brain, but I'll buy you some runway by telling you about this.
No, I'm good to go, because airport security is all about preparation and efficiency and knowing the rules of the game. You can get through very easily just with a little bit of prep, make sure that there aren't going to be any issues.
Batman style. You can beat anything with prep time.
Exactly. That's all it is. Yeah. Anyway, go on.
So this friend of mine, his wife had asked him to pick up something while he was away. We were both away together, and because they're redoing their house, specifically they're refloring.
So what did she want? I was going to say, what did she want? A paint of Dulux color? Like what? Get in Ireland.
They were reflooring their house.
Oh, bring back some 2x4 planks, please.
Here we go. And we were in England at the time, and there was this specific, this is post-Brexit, so there's a specific kind of tape that, so when you pull up a floor, underneath the floor are these things, I think they're called jousts, just sort of the beams that go along the floor, right?
Yeah, jousts. Yeah. Are they jousts or joists?
It might be joists.
Joists, I think, yeah. Anyway, go on, yeah.
You put the floorboards on top of them. But
like perpendicular to each other.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You can put down this audio dampening tape, basically, on the joists, so that it's not wood on wood, right?
Yeah.
And this guy's wife's an architect, so she was like very, very particular and had knew a lot about this stuff.
Yeah.
It was like there's a specific grade, a specific kind of decibel grading of tape that you can only get in the UK that won't ship to Ireland. I checked, it won't ship to anywhere in mainland Ireland. Please pick some up. Here's the list. Here's the order. Yada, 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 yada. And he's like, okay, I'll do it. So he goes to pick the stuff up. Bear in mind, he has to like dump all of his clothes out and give them to another friend of ours to take home. I'll get this out, because he needs every inch of space in checked luggage.
He's not buying one roll of this thing.
No, Riley. He is buying 45 kilos of tape.
No, what? No way, dude. So like when you said this, I thought it'd be like, oh, okay, so this is going to be an amusing story about how like, yeah, he couldn't fit it all in his suitcase, or like he had to put it in his pockets or that sort of thing. But I thought it was because, you know, he tried to fit four rolls where he only had room for two. How many rolls of tape did this guy buy? What?
I believe it was just over 40 kilos of tape.
Yeah, but how many rolls is that?
I don't know, dude. I think it was for like the whole house.
But is this an entire, give us an idea of the size of what this guy's buying. Is this an entire suitcase? Like a large suitcase?
It was a checked bag, a carry-on bag, a backpack, and a loose shopping bag of tape.
Yeah, not to mention all the stuff that he crammed in his pockets, in his coat pockets, like an illegal watch salesman. Yeah.
Yeah. So he had to give somebody, another friend of ours, clothes, everything, right? And he's like,
goodness.
All right, I got it crammed in.
Yeah.
It's going to be okay. We get to the airport.
Yeah.
He was on a different flight to me, so I had to get the story relayed to me secondhand. He gets to the airport, checks his bag, all good, right?
Mm-hmm.
Goes to security, loads his stuff up on the X-ray thing, you know, takes his watch off, takes his belt off, all that stuff.
Takes all the rolls of tape that he's got in his stuff down into his jocks, yeah.
Walks through and then realizes, as the guy calls him over, that he hasn't considered something, which is that when they scanned his bags, it's not just that he's brought enough tape to restrain everybody on the plane three times over.
Oh, dude! Oh, no!
He's also brought no other clothes. Nothing about his luggage looks like he ever intends to reach the destination of the flight.
Oh, man. Oh, jeez.
So they're like, we can't let you on the plane. You have enough to tie everybody up, club some people to death with the rolls, and have tape to spare.
Yeah, have a tape snack for afternoon tea before you land.
So, so they make him go back out, check all of it.
Yeah, okay, that's fair enough. Yes.
In like two other suitcases, right?
Yeah.
He gets home, he gets the tape, it's the right kind of tape, his wife's happy, they get the floor, I'm sure they're floor.
Oh,
sure
imagine if it had been the wrong side of tape. Type of tape.
I'm sure you can't hear a pin drop in there. Yeah, but just the idea of, and the killer for me, one thing is this guy's bag has so much tape in it. Another thing is this guy's bag has nothing but tape in it. But the realization that there's nothing in this but these bags that indicate an intent to reach a destination.
Yeah, not even a toothbrush.
That is wildly suspicious.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Oh, you know, I gave my clothes to my friend. Where's your friend? Oh, on a different flight. Okay, yeah. This all checks out for sure.
It was buck wild. So, yeah. You know, we were all, you know, relentlessly making fun of him, as you might imagine.
Well, and I mean, his wife's going to be smiling ear to ear. 45 kilograms of tape for her to play with. This is fantastic. She's having a great time.
But it's just so funny having to go back, because one of the other guys texted me and be like, hi, I'd like to check this carrier bag of suspicious tape, please. It's such an unhinged thing to do.
Oh, dear. He'd probably be spewing, because if he had to put them all in another big suitcase, probably could have fitted a couple more rolls in there.
Yeah.
How much did he pay to get all this tape, by the way? Because, like...
Oh, it was hundreds, but it was... I'm sure it was hundreds, but it was way cheaper than it would have cost to, you know... Because the tape was also cheaper and higher grade over there.
No. False. Where does he go? Dublin?
Yeah.
Get in your car. Drive 2 hours north to Belfast.
They don't have it there.
That's the UK. What? So they can, and this is
they wouldn't ship to the island of Ireland. They, it wasn't so, just that. If that was on the table, that would have 100% been the solution.
Yeah, exactly. There's no checks. There's no checkpoint at the
Everyone goes there to buy fireworks.
Yeah. So you come back with tape. They're like, oh, please, absolutely. You got any fireworks?
I just love the idea of this poor person sitting at the X-ray machine nothing in my training prepared me for this scenario. Frantically flicking through the training manual, being like, what do I do if guy has 40 kilos of tape?
Yeah, trying to find the chapter that deals with excess tape. Yeah, exactly.
Oh.
Holy moly.
Have you ever run afoul of security for being too much tape hubris?
No, well, do you know what it always was? I'm sure you can relate to this, right? I mentioned.
Oh, I know exactly what you're going to say.
You and I used to travel because of Magic the Gathering.
Yeah.
And often we would take decks with us, right? So Magic, for those of you who don't know, is a trading card game, kind of like Pokemon cards, whatever else. And when you play it, you build decks, which you put in little plastic sleeves, the cards to protect them, and then you have them sort of lumped together like you would a deck of cards, except they're a bit bigger than a deck of cards. Always, every Magic player listening to this will know that if you put a deck in a bag and try to put it through the X-ray machine, they will stop you and they will pull you aside and say, what's going on? Open your bag for us, please, right?
The reason because for that is because paper pressed together in an X-ray looks like liquid.
I've been told it looks like explosives.
That's what they mean, I think.
I've been told that they look at that and it has the same consistency or the same density or the same look on
it's
the
like
machine.
It's like Semtex?
As like a block of explosives, exactly. So they always have to.
Well, I had a really bad problem. I used to have a deck box that had two decks and a little compartment in the middle, the one that's Ultima Guard Towers, right? And a little compartment in the middle that you would use to store dice in, usually.
This episode brought to you by Ultima Guard, the very best you can get there's lots of other fantastic ones as well. Anyway, we're going.
You put dice in there. But Nikki had bought me D4s, which are just little pyramids. They were really, really nice for my birthday once that were. Steel.
Precision dice. Yeah.
Precision dice. And they were metal, Riley.
Yes.
So now I have two blocks of Semtex and a bunch of shrapnel in between them.
Yeah. And it's always so funny watching their face because one of two things happens, right? When the security agent takes the deck out there, they go, I remember this game. I've still got some cards in my deck. Yeah, that conversation that every Magic player's had. Yeah, just going through, look at them. Maybe there are some that are worth something, whatever. And then others that just like have this deeply suspicious, like, what is this? Are you a child? What are you doing? Why is there a picture of a dinosaur on this card? What are you doing?
Mm-hmm. I wonder if you had... See, that's one of those things where say you had a bunch of magic decks in a carry-on bag, which you know, many of our friends and colleagues would have had, right?
Yeah, for sure.
That's one of the things that once you crack open the suitcase, it's not. It's obvious that, you know, it's a card game or some children's thing, right?
Yeah, and you're just a huge... this guy's just a huge nerd coming through. Huge. He's on his nerd, way to, right? Some weird, you know, nerd festival and... Yeah.
Exactly. So yeah. Cracking open the suitcase answers the questions you had that the X-ray asked. That is not the case with the tape. I think it only unravels yet more questions.
Yeah, because it's not self-evident. It's not like, oh, this person's a huge nerd. They're going to a festival. It's
they're
like,
burning okay, all of their... They're burning all their carry-on space on this hobby they're obsessed with.
Yeah. Having a bunch of tapes, like, what, you're a tape enthusiast? You're a tape collector?
What, yeah, you play?
What's all this?
I'm on my way to TapeCon. Oh, okay, cool.
That makes sense. It was always so helpful, though, having an agent who knew what magic was, because then they were
Shortcut the entire conversation. It's like a Fallout when you have the, it's like you have speech 45, so you get to do the little slightly different colored option. It was exactly like that.
But you've just got to learn to speak the language of the security guard or security agent at the X-ray, right? You've got to learn what they're looking for and what they're not.
Yep.
So when they're like, you know, all electronics bigger than it, whatever. It's like, no. Ignore the bigger that. Just take all of the electronics out, right? Switch, Kobo, phone, anything that has chips and circuits and transistors in it, just take it out and put it in the tray. Yep. Like, yeah, empty pockets, shoes off. Just
James, when we traveled a lot, James would put all of those things.
Don't give them a reason, right? You do everything that you can think of to make sure you're going to get through, and then with a bit of luck, you end up on the other side nice and quick. So go on.
James used to keep keys, wallet, watch, Kindle and stuff all in his jacket pockets.
Oh,
and then just take his jacket off. Yeah.
But see, even that for me, no, I put all of my electronics out flat visible, right? Because like when I'm traveling, I'll have my Switch with me or something. And I'm just not interested in doing the whole thing where the bag goes into the different area and then they go and they poke it out and they do the bomb test and all that sort of stuff. You know, I'm busy, Matt. I got a plane to catch, quite literally.
I ran into trouble more than the average person, but less than some, because I'm an immigrant, so I have a funny looking surname, and I have an Irish passport, but the birthplace of my Irish passport doesn't say IRE; it says HRV.
People are like, what's HRV? Where's this hidden? Exactly. Where's this hidden country? Narnia?
Exactly.
What do you mean? Hrvatska? Never heard of it.
Never heard of it. Exactly. So I get pulled aside more than the average person. But again, like we talked about with indigenous people, I'm also white, so I get probably pulled aside a lot less than a lot of other immigrant people. Mm-hmm. But I got pulled aside once, and in Dublin Airport has security for normal Dublin Airport security. And then if you go to America, you can also cross the American border in Dublin. And that means when you get off of the plane landing in Boston or New York or wherever, it's as if you've landed on a domestic US flight. You just walk out of the airport. It's actually amazing.
Well, it is, but I want to say, I mean, at this point, I'm going to really congratulate the TSA because they have done a fantastic job of transplanting the culture that makes the TSA the institution that it is. You'll find that experience. I mean, it's in Ireland, a place that you can go
authentically American, yeah.
You can go and experience an authentically American cultural experience in Dublin Airport because they are rude and aggressive and they are not understanding and hostile and suspicious.
Well, what's very weird
just like they would be in the US of A.
It's hard though. They're all American border and Homeland Security agents who are on assignment in Ireland for like 6 months at a time. That would suck, to be fair.
Do you think so?
Do you think it would suck?
I think it'd be good fun.
I don't think it'd be good if you have a wife and kids or a husband and kids.
I suppose not, yeah. But, I mean, is it sort of a summit you can turn down? Like, if you took... I assume you took this voluntarily.
I think you get shipped.
Oh, okay. Well,
anyway,
it's not the worst place in the world. Anyway, I mean, there are worse places to live in than Ireland.
That's
case
definitely
point,
true.
Across the Irish Sea, the United Kingdom. Go on.
I got pulled aside at the American part of the security, and they're like, oh, can you please still go over here for a selected screening? Your bag's not going to get scanned here. It's going to get scanned over there by that young gentleman. I go, yeah, go, no problem. Mm-hmm. And he's like, passport, please. I hand him my passport. He looks back at me and he goes,
selected screening is just such a... Oh, I know. The PR, dude. The people working on... Like, the marketing department, the people who come up with terms like this, just... It is exquisite the way that they are completely just robbing our language of any of its nuance and subtlety anymore. Selected
because
screening.
Because this is profiling screening?
Oh, man. Go on. They'll make it sound like a special occasion.
Yeah, I know, right? So the lady looked at my passport, saw it was different, sent me over to this other dude. And I go over to this guy, and he looks at my passport, he looks up at me, and he goes, "Kote poslo vamo," which is Croatian for "who sent you here?"
Great.
And I'm like, "Oh, that lady over there." And he goes, and he folds up my passport, hands it back to me, he goes, "Don't worry about it." And just sends me through. Nobody scanned my bag, Riley.
The opposite, dude.
I skipped both parts of the security check line.
Maybe she knew. Maybe she looked at it, and she was like, "Oh, he's Croatian. He'll appreciate it.
Ivan will take care of him." Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, 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 exactly. Oh, dude, wow. That's wild. Oh, man. No, I look, I haven't had to do the airport security dance all that much recently.
Well, less than before. I mean, you're heading back to it now, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm going to go.
At time of recording, Riley could be, you know, tucked away being grilled about why he has all this tape and magic cards in his suitcase while you listen to this.
Exactly, which I'd be very confused by because I'm at time of recording, I have no plans to pack either of those things.
Oh, I have one more security thing.
Okay.
A friend of ours that we both know, Scott, we were traveling once for an event and we were very tired. It was very early in the morning, so I don't blame Scott for this. And James was carrying a bunch of camera gear, you know, because we were going to film things at this event for Sean Fireball and stuff. And he hands Scott a suitcase, sends me a suitcase. All right, these are your second suitcases. They're just camera gear, you know. So we, you know, they're in your names because we each get two bags. So you have your bag of clothes and the bag of camera gear you have to bring for the company.
Okay.
Cool. And we go up to the security. And Scott gets to the desk and the lady goes, "So, sir, this is your bag?" And he goes, "Yep." And she goes, "And you've packed this bag, you know, the sound card, you packed this bag yourself?" And she's like, "Yep." And she said, "Do you have any reason to suspect anyone's added anything to the bag since you packed it?" "No, I do not." "Okay." And she goes, "Do you have any batteries in this bag?" And he goes, "Oh, I don't know. I didn't pack it." And she's like, she's like, "What? The conversation tree has just been blown apart."
That option shouldn't be available on the dialogue.
No, that should be grayed out. And she's just staring at him. And she's like, "I have to get my manager to talk to you now. Because he was clearly just taking the questions at face value, you know. And the first couple are rehearsed questions you do 1,000 times. And the answer to the last one, honestly, it was like, "Oh, wait, no."
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of Have a Listen to This. We do hope you've enjoyed the episode. And hey, if you haven't, doesn't matter. The download numbers show up all the same. So whatever, suckers. But if you did enjoy this show, please tell your friends about it. And look, tell people that aren't your friends. Tell acquaintances and even your enemies. Again, the downloads show up all the same. And if you want to support the show, if you really like the show this much, you can support us on Patreon. Patreon.com/Have a Listen to This. You get access to behind the scenes stuff, early access to episodes, all sorts of things. We are definitely in this for the money, not for the love of the game or anything like that. So head over to Patreon and help us get them rookie numbers up.